This is a discussion call where you can express your views on any topic of your choice. This is an open forum, and the views expressed by the speakers here may or may not necessarily represent the views of National Liberty Alliance. It is essentially the people's hour. Today is Thursday, the 21st of June, 2018. It is now on... I'm in the Mountain States time zone. It's 1901 where I'm at Mountain time. So that makes it 2101 on Eastern Daylight Time. And it throws me off sometime. I have to do a lot of math, quick math in my head. So sorry about the delay. So I will open it up, and anybody is welcome to speak. And this is Terry. And the meeting is being recorded. The floor is yours, whoever wants it. Anybody have a hot topic that they'd like to jump on, or something they'd like to talk about?
There must not be many of us on here tonight.
There are roughly 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Last night, you hit on some things that really snapped things in my mind. I told you about Bill Cosby, who was in... a slot to take over the Tactical Air Command, and you hit on the stuff that he and I had talked about many times, and I thought it was very interesting about the, the things that were taking place that they government didn't want us to know about the flying saucers, et cetera. And I thought that was very interesting because he and I had quite interesting conversations about it. And unfortunately, when I got into pilot training, I lost contact with him.
Camille, did you want to say something?
Well, I like to come on the calls really to listen to some very intelligent person talking about something that I'm learning a lot from.
What did you want to learn about?
I don't know. I think it's what I find really interesting is that interface between the Constitution and the what's become the corporatized government, and how they seem to maneuver through that in a very skillful way.
Oh, okay. Well, but a lot of people. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I myself don't really have anything intelligent to add. I'm just kind of reading and learning about it.
Well, you're right. There's a lot of smart people in here.
Yeah.
Anybody want to talk about the corporate state versus the Constitution? You're welcome to have the floor. And Camille, if you're doing things that your mic is really hot, so you're very loud, and it's picking up every time you move a dish or put a plate down or something. So just want to let you know you can use
Star
6 to mute yourself when you're just listening. Okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead, everyone. It's not my show.
Well, Robert, are you on the call?
I don't see Robert.
Well, I got a question between constitutional and corporate, sort of like in Michigan, we're hashing it out. The courts are so corrupt, we know that. The county courts are so corrupt. And the question I have is, can the sheriff, which is the constitutional highest officer of the county, constitutional, can he call a grand jury and a petit jury himself and jump over the shoulders of a magistrate because the magistrates are so corrupt? Now, I'm getting feedback from different people on this, and they disagree. My position is this: yes, he can do that because he is the highest officer of the county. So any feedback, I'd like to hear. John DeRash says, yes, the sheriff can do that. He can override the magistrates if they're too corrupt. So
I agree with John.
I do too.
And calling that grand jury, if there's not enough people to form a jury, it is the sheriff's responsibility to walk down to the ground floor and go find a few more. And
that's right.
Can, right there at the same time, he can recruit people and bring them up and put them on the jury. Gary, in Pennsylvania, you got some kind of flutter on your, like wind noise or something on your call.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I muted myself. Hey, I got some background noise. I'm outside. I'll mute. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're welcome to speak at any time.
Okay, thanks.
You know how to unmute. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I got a helicopter right above me.
Is it the sheriff looking for a jury?
I don't know, but I'll volunteer.
Oh, you know, I get the feeling sometimes I would love to be called on a jury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
for that very reason, that I know enough now to where I think I could be effective. How many people here have watched 12 Angry Men? It's a movie.
I'm pretty sure I saw that years ago.
Yeah, it was back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it on television.
The other day, watch it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting, so I remember it. I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember it was pretty interesting.
Basically, the idea was is that they came in, and they said, this guy did it. The lady saw it from all across there. They went through all of the evidence, and they said, okay, let's take a vote. And one guy said, no, I don't think so, not guilty. And so they finally figured out who the one guy was, and then he says, why do you think not guilty? And so he took each item of evidence and went through it, and by the end of the movie, everybody decided, I hate to spoil it. I'm sorry, I've dominated the conversation, I don't want to do that. Please. Let's talk about anything you want.
Well, you know, if you get on a jury today, they're going to screen you real good. So if you don't give them all the correct answers, you're not going to stay there. You know that.
Yes. And back before I found the NLA, I went and was called as a jury, possible jury, potential jury member. And I went in and listened to the guy, and I looked at the guy, and I said, this guy did it. I just knew that this guy did it. And then they, in voir dire, or what do they call it, they asked me a few questions. And I would have been one to help convince everybody that, yeah, he did it. But the prosecution said, because of what I revealed in voir dire, that, no, we don't want her serving. And so he kicked me off.
Well, there was a pastor up here in Michigan. This is probably a year ago or more. He was handing out little booklets as the people were going into the courthouse to serve on the jury. And these little booklets were from the jury association or something like that. They just simply told the law, and they simply advised the potential juror that he has all the right to judge the law. Well, pretty soon, I guess the bailiff came out and arrested this pastor on the street. And it was in the papers up here. I think he was charged for influencing juries. And the judge tried to throw the book at him. Now, I don't know how it turned out, but I heard he got convicted. So that's how they got it boxed in.
Has everybody been following the Brent Winters as he discusses the Declaration of 1776?
Yep. What's that?
Go ahead.
He's on five nights a week, too. I don't know if you know that or not. Liberty Works Radio Network.
I listen to him.
They sometimes play duplicates, but I learn a lot there also. It's on 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock Eastern. So I try to listen to it every night, every weekday night. And then Brent has a Saturday morning evidence class where you study the Bible, and he makes you pick out three evidences out of a chapter during the week. And then on Sunday morning, he has a Bible study. I try to attend all of these because I think he's just fabulous with his knowledge.
I agree with that.
That anyone heard about the prisoners, the 17 episodes, that was like 50 years ago. I'm reading from the Lou Rockwell, and there is John W. Whitehead. I have his books. Excellent article. Government eyes are watching you. We are all prisoners of the surveillance state. And presumably there was some long time ago, there was the series, and the series contains 17 episodes, and the name of this series is called The Prisoner. And on today's issue of Lou Rockwell, I can see it. I will watch later, I mean, as much as I can. The good news today, I guess, that Charles Krauthammer died. He was the warmonger. At age 68.
I had not heard he died.
Yeah, he was sick. No, I mean, I said, you know, the good news, you know, it's never good news if somebody dies, but this guy was unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree. I always looked up to him. He was a pretty smart guy. I mean, he did all of this, and I've heard people tweet that he was too stiff on TV, and they didn't know that he was, you know, he slipped and fell in his pool or something and was a paraplegic or quadriplegic for the last some team number of years of his life. But the Prisoner was a very good show. I love that thing. I don't think I saw all the episodes, but I saw enough of them back in the 60s when I was a kid. I love it. Patrick McGoohan, wasn't it?
I haven't seen it. I would recommend to everybody. I'm at the website. I learn everything from the LouRockwell.com. They have articles, blogs, and political theater. Short articles, longer articles, but it's not only written by one person. There is many contributors, and it's absolutely brilliant. I've been with him about 12 years, maybe more, and I bought, I met lots of people, bought their books. I mean, not in person, but, and I love some guys. I read all of them articles, and they're always on point.
You mentioned John Whitehead.
Yes.
My secretary, when she was a young girl, her family, this is back in the, I think the 60s, her family started homeschooling. They had 9 children. And that's when homeschooling was not even hardly known yet. And so the county or the state took her family to court because they were homeschooling. They weren't sending them to the elementary school. And so her folks fought it. And John Whitehead came out here from Virginia, and he defended them pro bono. And they won their case. The judge says you don't have to send your children to school. That's quite a win. It was in the newspapers up here quite a while. The case went on, I think, for, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks, I believe. Went on a long time. So.
I just purchased his book. I mean, not just. It's probably like two, three years ago. And I'm just looking at it. I used to have it in front of me. This is the America Battleground, something like that, prison. Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. All factual issues, no politics.
Yeah, I got some of his books, too. I like them.
Well, my view on the subject that was brought up earlier about the Constitution and common law, and in my opinion, our life is dictated by the economics of daily struggle, and we spend too much time ourselves. Unless you are retired, you don't have much time to learn. But people who are in power, they don't much care what is right, what is wrong. Like in the case of the sheriffs or police departments, then they just like the money and retirement and the pensions. And, of course, they are influenced and defended by the attorneys. So the, and I only speak on the experience what I have in my county with the sheriff. The last time he runs unopposed, and that was shocking to me. And he just go with the flow. He doesn't, he has no opposition. He's got those lawyers tell him what to do and what else he needs. He cares for his well-being and pretty much everybody else. And like a couple weeks ago, someone mentioned that, I think John Durash mentioned that those lawyers today, they are not taught about the Constitution. They're not taught about the common law. They're only looking for the statute because it's easier for them. And even you bring the constitutional common law, we don't have a chance because they don't understand. And this is what John struggle right now in the in this case, gun case in the state.
Mm-hmm. It's not John, it's the organization.
We, but John names is up there and he probably writes most of it. But like I said, the economics dictate our life more than any time in our life. Today, it's more important than in the past. John W. Whitehead, he is the Rutherford Institute head, I would say. He's the author of the A Government of Wolves, Emerging American Police State and Change and the Change Manifesto. So probably some another book. He is the constitutional attorney, like this gentleman mentioned earlier.
There's not many of them. You know, comparing pre-revolutionary times with today, they had two things which we really don't have anymore. One is there were 3 million people in the colonies. In England, Britain, there was 8 million. In the colonies, they sold more Blackstone's commentaries than they did in Britain. The colonies were reading Blackstone. And another thing is the preachers were gung-ho on liberty. I got some different books on it, sermons. All right, they got the people fired up. We have just the opposite today. The people encourage the preachers encourage the people to just simply obey the government. Romans 13. That's all. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, some priests take this Romans 13 a different way. I mean, I don't know if the God wants any government. When the Jews at the Samuel, I think, second, came to him and asked for the king, he specifically set up his own rules, what king can do, but he later reject them, and he predicted, you know, one day you come to me and I will not hear you, and that's what happened today. People usually say, oh, where is the God? Where is the God? Well, you choose the kings of the earth, and now you're coming to me. And he said vividly to the his chosen people, he says, the time comes, then you will cry out for me, and I will not listen to you. And, you know, not many churches teaching that this way.
No.
And speaking about the chosen people, you know, that the God was very vivid when he allocated land for 11 tribes, and tribe of Levi, they're supposed to be the priests. I don't know how many today's those so-called themselves the Jews, you know, they are from those 11 or 12 tribes. They even call themselves Ashkenazi, Khazarians, so obviously they are not from that Isaac tribe, Isaac's sons. So then who are the chosen people right now? I think the followers of the Christ.
Well, Romans speaks about that. Romans 9. All Israel are not of Israel. In other words, there is a spiritual Israel. They are the true Israel.
When Jesus was sitting in the well, and there was a Canaanite woman, she came to him, and she said they pray on those on the mountains. He saw some, I don't know, there was some. Jesus said to her, "You know what? Jews and you, the time will come. Then you, everybody else, will worship God in spirit, not in physical places." And that's the question: why did that? Why he did not rebuild the temple the third time? There is some misinformation in the in churches today. They think, you know, that the Antichrist would come and they will rebuild the third temple. Jesus says, no, not anymore. Now you worship in the spirit. You know, the building is not as important as in the beginning. And you're right, in the Bible, that God's law, God defiled the land, God defiled the Israel many times because they disobey his law or statutes, whatever. The last 6 months, I tried to find people to just, you know, follow the National Liberty Alliance or, you know, just go to the courts or go to the city meetings, and I'm very unsuccessful. I'm still by myself.
I have the same thing out here.
People are so ignorant. They think, put me something else I like to say. Seems to me like this whole country is like the big military base. They're taking the orders from the guy from the top, and they're very happy. They don't have to think.
That's right.
That's what reminds me. Nobody cares. Nobody question authority. Oh, yeah, we have to do that. Well, sure. Why are you against it? I say, I'm not against it or anything. I'm just, you know. Here say this, over there say other thing. I said, oh, Constitution says one thing. Oh, you know, we are, now the ordinance seems like from the pitiful municipal corporation are more important than the Constitution.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a martyr. But, I mean, I'm an eyeball out here. People don't want to associate with me because I want to talk about this kind of stuff. And people could care less.
Same here.
They could care less about it. I mean, in the church, well, I got excommunicated from the church for disobeying the government 24 years ago already. But the point is that people don't understand. They don't want to understand.
They go to church today like they go to the dinner or breakfast. They think the attendance means everything.
Well, Paul speaks about that, I believe, in Timothy maybe or something. He says they are willingly ignorant. Willingly ignorant. That's what I see today. And I was no different years ago when I was putting my 70 hours a week in pouring concrete. I was too busy to think about this stuff. Until I got hauled into court. That's when the light bulb went on. That's the case with a lot of the people I know in the movement. When they got hauled into court or something happened in their life, that then the light bulb went on. So
the book by the John W. Whitehead, titled Battlefield America, The War and the American People, and that's the book that I was referring earlier. I wasn't sure what is the real title. And I was heading this, I have this book in my lap when I was at the airport, and one security guard came over and looked at me and says, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah, this is the book I'm reading." This is unbelievable. I said, yeah, it is unbelievable, because they have like the helicopter, they have like the fence, and they have this soldier look like from the, what was the, like future soldier. You don't see, you can see only armor, you don't see you see the figure, you don't see the face. And I read this book, and it touches so many corners. Basically, all the information is factual information.
One of his books I have is called The Stealing of America. I got a couple, three of his different books, so. But that's one of them, if I can remember it.
Well, I was reading about the French Revolution, and I think this is a very touchy subject, but I will say it anyway. And I make some notes. I will read this, what I made. French Revolution, I think French Revolution started 1789, so American Revolution 1776. So it's probably like 20, 23 years earlier, right? French Revolution further de-Christianized France. A new civil religion was introduced. The new civil religion is called patriotism. Female dancer was crowned as the goddess of reason and performed from the assembly. A supreme being was replaced by atheistic adoration of reason. And then the French shipped the what we call Lady Liberty, which is in the, I think it's New York Harbor over there. And you know, we have a choice. Either is the supreme being or the civil religion. Law of the man or law of the God, and people never look this way. Left hand civil religion, right hand supreme being, and that's the struggle today. The old courts are civil. When those civil rights came to us, I mean, why we have a civil rights? No, nobody object. We have unalienable rights.
It's part of the brainwashing.
Yeah,
civil means city, according to Brent Allen Winters. So it's the law of the city.
I would say when I was in the early in my life, civil for me means not in uniform. That's the way I understood first. But I know the civil means they have so many meanings today. I never studied Greek. I never studied Latin. But some times ago, basic education was Greek and Latin. So the people at least know the origination of words where we're using today, and probably that was the real purpose to stop teaching them that.
Well, Brent Allen-Waters goes into that whole comparison between the civil law and the common law. Civil law started way back there in Genesis, is it 6? I'm not sure, with Nimrod. The Lord said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So he wanted the people to scatter out, multiply, and fill the earth. Nimrod, the heathen, he says, I want to build a Tower of Babel. I want it to go to the heavens. And then I want to build that city of Babylon, and then I want to hoard all the people into that city so I can control them all. And that was the start of the civil law. It's the law of the city. Brent really, really hammers that point home all the time. And that's what we have today here. We may say we have the law of the land, which we should have, but in the courts, it's the civil law. You can't get your foot in the door in the courts.
I mentioned earlier how economics has an important role in today's our life. What I'm going to say, this is my saying, that the reason we have civil law, because they make jobs, good paying jobs for lots of people in the government. Because if we have the common law, you technically don't need the courts. Yes, you can have the courts, but there would be limited scope, limited issues, because you would only look at the injury to property and injury to the person. So what they did, they write those statutes and they print those books. Did you ever notice, any lawyer usually sitting behind some books, like he thinks like he read them or something like that. I see lots of lawyers, like to take the picture with the books behind him, like statutes, not dictionary, the codification of the state, federal, et cetera, et cetera. So there's the aura kind of like, oh, this guy knows something. Look how many books he had behind. He probably read them. No, he didn't read them. He doesn't know at all. Nothing was there. He used the service to find some case law from somewhere else, from probably paralegal. In today's world, they probably use the computers. But that brings lots of money. And, the prisons, attorneys, politicians, they love that. Otherwise, they'd be out of the work. The drugs, et cetera, et cetera. Did you guys hear that Canada legalized the marijuana yesterday? I think it's the second country in the world. I think first one either is Uruguay or Argentina, I would say Uruguay, when it's legal. And I have a brother in Canada. He said that now they can have four plants in the home, and he wasn't sure how much grams over there, not ounces. They have a metric system. You can carry in your pocket. And I think this is the huge win for the prime minister. But they're in 2 months, because they're thinking, they probably start burning those code books, law, the statutes, which say what kind of penalty you're going to have or not. So, and they presumably going to free lots of some prisoners who are accused of smoking or possession of marijuana. I think that's what we need. That would be great freedom.
Well, if you want to understand the difference between common law and statutory law, you go to Luke 10, I believe it is, the parable of the Good Samaritan, and study that good, because there Christ, while upon earth, taught the difference between common law and civil law. People think he just taught that we should do good deeds like the Samaritan. But he was teaching common law versus civil law there, too. Very interesting.
Yeah. Jesus spoke by parable, and so some people think why he did it. Well, he did it. He gave people example, I would say. But they probably didn't understand anyway, or they were obnoxious. This guy, you know, it's Jesus says it's easier go to camel through the eye of the needle than the rich man go to the heaven. Isn't that's what he said? Something to it, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's what I'm bringing up. You know, the economy. We have two gods. One is the mammon, which is money, and other one is the good thing. And we always choose the money. I mean, not everybody, but...
Well, his disciples asked him why he spoke in parables. He told them it was because that it was only for those who could see. And if you read John 9:36, with that blind man, and he was blind all of his life, and then Jesus came and healed him, opened his eyes, and so he went around broadcasting it, and the church leaders got a hold of that, and they says, well, that man over there, he healed me. Oh, you can't be right. They finally excommunicated the man, and then Jesus came to him, and he said to the man, for judgment am I come, that those who see not might see, and those who might see might be made blind. And that's why he came. Quite something. The Pharisees and scribes said they could see everything. You didn't have to tell them anything.
Yep.
But Jesus was talking about the Pharisees there. They confessed that they saw everything, but they were blind and a bat.
Well, Jesus, in the Revelation, he used very strong word. In the Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, he called them synagogue of Satan. He said, you're not Jews. And very few people today, try to... bring this, why he said that. Well, I think when the second temple was, they get the order to Ezra, the prophet, to give the, to rebuild the temple. So he was looking for Levites. And they came to him, and Ezra asked them for the papers, genealogy. I mean that, and some of them have it, and some of them don't. So you can see some of them try to cheat the Ezra. And as, to those who didn't have it, he says, you are defiled. You're not a Jew because you don't have a proof. Why? That's what I'm thinking, what Jesus thought when he said that. He also said to them, Pharisees, that they make their own laws, they not follow the God's law. That's what they hate him. But it also is, I'm going back to this Canaanite woman, when 10 tribes of Israel, except Benjamin and Judah, were taken to Assyria into slavery, and they never come back. God brought the Assyrians to the Samaria. So that's the two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, hate them. And when Jesus was speaking to this Samaritan woman, his 12 apostles, they said, well, look, why are you talking to her? You know, just go away. They are no good. But after what Jesus spoke with her, and he told her who she is, who she was married, etc., she believed him. And Jesus said to her, you know what? I found more faith in you than in all those lost tribe of Israel. And he went and spent the two days and two nights with them. And I think this is what my conclusion. That's what he realized, that the not Jew, not the are people with the great faith, better faith than those who he come to save. Okay, I have this civil definition, adjective relating to ordinary citizens and their concerns, as distinct from military or ecclesiastical matters. You know, I wouldn't take this for granted, because those definitions today are watering down. They just mirroring the current situation, current wisdom under which we operate today. But again, to me, it's always civil is not in military, not in uniform. But we already have unalienable rights, common law deals with a civil matter as well, between men to man. This is we don't need it. But what I see it is, they make civil rights because the man made them. They don't like the unalienable rights because come from created. They don't want you have something without the license. In other words, everything now has to be licensed. Get from corporate government today, and people buying this like, oh gee, what a great deal. And this is from Luraquel on June 9, Collective Evolution by Richard Enos. I like this quote. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And he quote Buckminster Fuller. I don't know who was this guy, but I kind of like that. And the Russell Brand, he's the English comedian, I guess, maybe even singer, who knows. I say us, obviously I don't vote, as I believe democracy is pointless. I'm sorry, I believe democracy is pointless spectacle where we choose between two indistinguishable political parties, neither of whom represent the people, but the interest of powerful business elites that run the world. And I like this dude. I see him here and there, and he's got a good mind, and he's speaking, you know, publicly. He's been here and there on TV. Oh, now I have another note from Lou Rockwell. Europe has 2.4 million men in uniform with the budget, military budget, $275 billion annually. Russia has 1.5 million, which is 0.9 million less men in uniform, and has only $70 billion spent on military. So 70 versus 275. And for some strange reason, everybody afraid of Russia, which is very, very small compared to this mammoth Europe. It's excluding United States. United States has the budget around $1 trillion versus $70 billion of Russia, and they pretend like Russia is going to take over us. I mean, this is so ridiculous. Did any of you knows Kevin Shipp, former CIA operative? He has a YouTube video for about three hours. About a week ago, I listened to. It's absolutely brilliant. This is inside CIA. He tried to tell them what he saw and how they keep him quiet, or at least try to keep him quiet. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I heard him. Same with Robert David Steele. He's ex-CIA too.
Yeah,
like David, Kevin Shipp.
Yeah. There is, I make some there was then, who was this? Oh, Bill Binney, Christopher Bolin. There is more men, but obviously they are not front pages of newspapers or on the TV channels. Someone mentioned the James Traficant speech. There was March 17, 1993. I copied that. I have a PDF. I read it. This explains you everything, what we have, and when the whole thing changed for the worst.
Yeah, they finally put him away for 8 years, too, you know.
Well, he's dead now. He died in 2014. But
yeah, I know that. I know that.
1993. And he was brave, saying that in front of the whole Congress.
Yeah, I got the speech, too.
Nobody cares, you know, just... We don't have the remedy. They deny us on every level. Hopefully, the higher power give us some remedy. They give us something, and maybe we can put our foot in the courts.
And with that, it's been an hour, and I want to thank everyone for contributing to tonight's meeting. I'll have it up on the website here shortly. This has been the open discussion call, and the views expressed may or may not agree with the NLA. I'm Terry, and this concludes the June 2018 call that started at about 9:01 Eastern Time. I hope you all have a great night.